Hello, friends. We are interrupting Healing Hearts to remind you April is not just a month. It's a call to action. This month, we celebrate Volunteer Appreciation and Child Abuse Prevention Month, recognizing those who give their time and hearts to protect our most vulnerable. Every child deserves a life filled with love, safety, and normalcy. But sadly, not every child experiences this. That's where we, as a community, step in. Our amazing volunteers are the unsung heroes working tirelessly to advocate for children's well-being. They're the voices that speak up, the hands that reach out, and the hearts that care deeply. But the fight against child abuse needs much more than just appreciation. It needs action. This April, we invite you to participate in our efforts to protect children, provide them with the normalcy they deserve, and advocate for their rights. Visit www.speakupforkidspbc.org to find out what you can do to amplify the voices of our volunteer advocates. Remember to engage with us on social media. Participate and protect, because every child deserves a champion, and that champion could be you. Now, back to Healing Hearts.
A lot of social workers and psychologists will say, if you have a latent thought or emotion that you're avoiding, the best way to touch it is to put a pen to a piece of paper and write about it.
Hey there, friend. Welcome to Healing Hearts, where we understand the challenges of parenting children with behavioral, developmental, or emotional divergence. If you've ever struggled with fear, uncertainty, exhaustion, isolation, or even feelings of guilt along your parenting path, we get it. Here, it's all about guiding you through the highs and lows of raising kids who need equal parts love, patience, and empathy. Our approach is a little different. Healing Hearts was created and continues to be hosted by dynamic high school and college students who consider the support of vulnerable or at-risk children and their families critical to student success. What can you expect from us? Encouragement and honest talk with terrific guests, sharing relatable stories and smart tips to make your journey smoother. We also focus on parents and children's mental and emotional health because it's vital. You'll get simple, effective strategies to keep you strong and positive, because parenting is a heroic act. And when advice isn't enough, we point you towards extra help and resources. Stay with us, tune in, and let's take this journey together. We are here to back you up, boost your spirits, and help you confidently face each day. Welcome to the Healing Hearts family. We are so happy to have you here.
We are pleased to welcome Julie McGue, a celebrated author known for her insightful exploration of identity and origins. At the age of 48, when a medical procedure highlighted the challenges of her closed adoption, it set her on a quest to uncover her roots. Beyond her writing, Julie's life as a mother, grandmother, and identical twin enriches her storytelling, filling pages with reflections on identity, resilience, and belonging. Her experiences offer profound insights into the search for personal history and the universal quest for identity, belonging, and connection. Welcome to Healing Hearts.
Oh, thanks for having me today. I look forward to our conversation.
Of course. So to begin, we would ask if you could please share your background and journey with our listeners. Talk a little bit about how your upbringing in a family blended with adoption and biological children.
Well, one of the things you didn't mention in that lovely introduction is that I'm also an identical twin. And so my twin sister and I were adopted together as infants, and 2 years after my parents joined the family with us, they adopted a little boy, not a biological relative to mine. So there was three adoptees right off the bat. And then, as often happens, they didn't have any more infertility issues and had three biological children. So I grew up in this crazy big Irish Catholic family that was very blended. I did not have the sense that they had any favorites. Really, we all had the same list of chores and allowances and same punishments if we screwed up. So they did a really nice job of imparting great family values and work ethic. But every so often around our birthday, my parents would pull my sister and I into the living room and ask us, you know, how were we feeling about our adoption? Did we have any questions? And because it was a closed adoption, they didn't have any kind of history for my sister and I. They didn't know why we'd been placed for adoption. They didn't even know where we came from. But the talk was really about assessing whether someday we might want to search for our biological parents and find out any information. And it was an uncomfortable conversation. I was a happy kid. My sister was happy. And, you know, we really weren't ready to even talk about exploring that. So while there was a curiosity about who our birth parents were and what the circumstances were that caused us to be adopted, we just didn't rock the boat. And, you know, one of the nice things about having been adopted with a twin sister is I didn't have to worry about who I looked like. I could just look across the room and know that I looked like this person. So that was a real blessing to be raised with her. And my brother, that's 2 years younger, we were like a little pack, the three of us. You know, we didn't really talk about we're adopted and the younger three aren't. I mean, it just didn't seem like it was an issue. So it just kind of, you know, sat there for a while. And then, as you mentioned in the intro, I was sent for a breast biopsy when I was 48. And that really underscored the issue that I didn't have any family background whatsoever. I got lucky, though, because the adoption statutes in Illinois were changing at that time. And I was able to access my original birth record, which wasn't very helpful, which is another conversation. There's a lot of missing information, and my birth mother's name on it was an alias. So I ended up hiring a confidential intermediary who's a social worker, and their job, this agency in Illinois, they help adoptees and also people from the foster care system connect to their lost relatives, but also people that they felt close to. And I was very successful in working with her to get information. It was a long process because it took a while to find everybody, and there was a lot of rejection in there. Not everybody wanted to be found when we reached out to them.
Yeah, I can imagine the uncomfortable conversations that it must have been to have with your parents at that young of an age, and then sort of realizing later on that it was potentially necessary to understand some more about your medical history. Kind of a two-sided thing there.
Closed adoption is a stark contrast to open adoption, which what most people are familiar with that term, because open adoption sort of replaced closed adoption in the 1980s. And so when a birth mom develops an adoption plan with the adoptive parents, they have some kind of agreement about contact, letter writing, picture sharing, things like that. So I think an adoptee grows up with a little bit more idea of their identity and where they came from than my sister and I did way back in the 1960s.
Yeah. So that was really amazing. Thank you for that. I kind of want to touch on that. You did mention how you had to find it necessary to find your parents because of your health. So as much as you're comfortable, could you share about the struggles of uncovering that much needed health information, you know, in the face of a medical crisis, and how the closed adoption proved challenging?
Well, one of the things that we ran into was our birth mom was told when she relinquished my sister and I that she would never be found, and which at that time, birth mothers used aliases all the time, and it was completely legal. She did not have to state who our birth father was, so his name wasn't on our original birth record. And which is an amazing thing to think about, really, that a father did not relinquish his rights or And he did know that she was pregnant. So, I mean, those were different times back then. So we had to battle the lack of information to access our medical history. And when my birth mother was contacted, she did not want anything to do with any of this. And I had to get a judge involved. And I gave the judge all my medical records saying, you know, I just need her. She doesn't have to have contact with us, but I need her medical history. And it was kind of a record-breaking case at that time in 2011, because up until that point, once a birth mom says no, that's the end of the contact. But he authorized it. We sent her a medical questionnaire. She filled it out. She sent it back. And then for 6 months, we never heard from her. And then she changed her mind, talked with the intermediary. And after exchanging cards and letters, we talked on the phone. And the very first thing I asked her for was my birth father's name, which she gave me, but spelled his last name incorrectly. So we had a really tough time locating him. And so to go to the answer your question, Riley, my birth father's sister died of breast cancer before she was 40. So making certain that he was our birth father, we needed DNA analysis. And my doctors wanted me to go for gene testing, BRCA gene testing. So all those things were happening at the same time. Me going for BRCA gene testing, that affected my sister. I have three daughters. So the ripple effect of this lack of information wasn't just about me. It was about my sister, her family, and my family. My birth father also did not want any contact with my sister and I, which left us in a big conundrum, which is one of my favorite scenes in the book that I wrote, Twice a Daughter, about this whole adoption search and reunion story. Is my birth father, he completely pushed my sister away, but he had two kids from his first marriage, and he told them about my sister and I. And my half brother just called me up one day and we got acquainted. We ended up knowing a lot of the same people. It's a crazy synchronicity. I knew his wife and he agreed to gene testing, DNA testing, and we matched. So now I'm really, really careful. I got ultra screening for breast cancer. I haven't had it yet. Hopefully not. And my daughters they know to be careful too.
Thank you. That was amazing. So I want to kind of touch on, you talking about your health. How is your health today?
Great. And one of your questions earlier was about my twin sister. She never had any problems. So, I mean, that's kind of the funny thing about our relationship is I always tease her that I have been the guinea pig for her all through our life. I had problems with my tonsils, had them out. She didn't have one thing. I mean, it's physically, I guess I would be considered the sick twin. But regardless, the benefit of that breast biopsy was getting our medical history and then meeting, you know, both sides of our family. So I'm still in contact with my birth mom. It's a little complicated relationship, but she never had any other kids. So my sister and I are it for her. And birth mothers have their own set of issues, a lot of shame. And in her personality, she's had a really tough time dealing with having been an unwed mother and also relinquishing my sister and I.
So I kind of want to go back a little bit, because I know you talked about meeting your half-brother, having that sort of conversation and realizing that he was willing to have that conversation and just talk as opposed to your birth father. So I was wondering, in what ways did this journey into finding your familial connections bring you a sense of connectedness or bolster your idea of identity, or did it not bring you that sense of connectedness?
Definitely. It did bolster my sense of identity in the sense that piece was always missing. I didn't know where I came from. I didn't know who these people were, and I didn't know why they placed us for adoption. So all of those things got answered. But as a middle-aged person, finding out the facts took a while for me to get my arms around that. I didn't have any idea that my birth parents were in their 20s, like mid-20s. They were not like teenagers that, you know, this just happened. They were consenting, knowing adults. So that was a surprise. I also learned that I'm Native American on both sides of my family. So that was not ever anything that Catholic Charities told my sister and I. And I'm still trying to figure out how I think about that. I mean, I would have embraced knowing more about that culture growing up, but because I didn't know about it, it's just kind of an interesting fact that I haven't taken into my identity.
So you talk about writing and your books. So I kind of want to move on to that topic of how did you reconcile the feelings of rejection you discussed in your blogs and books? And how was writing and sharing your story cathartic for you?
A lot of social workers and psychologists will say if you have a latent thought or emotion that you're avoiding, the best way to touch it is to put a pen to a piece of paper and write about it. And I definitely find that to be true. If I have an idea, let's say secondary rejection is what is referred to, like when my birth mom said she didn't want any contact with us, that's called secondary rejection. The first rejection is considered just adoption itself. And a lot of times I don't understand what I'm going to say until I sit down and write something. And then I circle back and find meaning in it. And a universal truth that'll apply to a lot of people. So writing really helps me know what I think about something. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. We kind of have that. We've had that conversation on the podcast before. So you're very much emphasizing the need to, you know, touch a feeling is to be able to write it and understand the deeper meanings behind it. And I'm sure that writing was cathartic for you and, you know, taking this journey. But also, I am assuming that also being a parent and now a grandparent also probably has shaped or changed your perception of, you know, what's important and finding those connections. And could you touch upon that?
Yeah, I one of the things I think that was interesting for having written the book Twice a Daughter, which is about the adoption search and reunion, is my kids didn't really understand the whole impact of what I was doing. They listened to the story. Some of them were in college, some of them were in high school, one was in grammar school. And so by writing the whole story start to finish from my perspective, sharing about my birth parents' rejection. My adoptive mom wasn't that crazy about what I was doing, so there was a lot of angst there too. They read the book and each one of them said, "I'm so sorry, Mom. I had no idea you were going through all that." And that reaction, I think, translates to other people that are in the adoption triad, or people that are touched by adoption, or people that don't have any idea what it's like to be an adoptee. Sharing our stories, I think, allows a reader to get inside our head, to see life from our perspective. And so by writing a story, we're giving a gift to other people too, as well as growing ourselves.
What do you think is one of the most significant obstacles for adoptees to overcome in navigating the closed adoptions? Because you were just saying how your adoptive mother wasn't so, you know, enthusiastic about your whole finding the journey. So I can only imagine that that is one obstacle. Is there a more significant one that you found?
I think most adoptees struggle with, is this a decision I should make? Is now the right time? And how do I do it? So I'm part of an adoption support group that has adoptees, adoptive parents, and birth parents involved in it. And from start to finish, people are still struggling with, you know, my adoptive parents don't want me to do this, but I want to do it. Should I do it? There's so many decisions and factors involved adoption searching is not for everybody. Some people are afraid of what they're going to find. Other people are afraid of being rejected. And that scares off a lot of folks. I didn't have the luxury of deciding whether to do it or not. I had to do it to get my medical history. Am I glad I did? Yes, it was not an easy thing. At the finish line, I'm glad I met my birth mother. I'm glad I know my story. But it was a lot of conversation, a lot of work with a social worker to try and understand why things were happening the way they were and why. I just felt like my birth mom would welcome me with open arms. And that was not the case. She had her own life, and I was complicating it by injecting myself into it.
Yeah. So obviously, with everything that you're saying, you clearly have a very good understanding and would be able to kind of give advice to anyone going through a similar situation. So what I guess I want to ask is, what is the first step an adoptee should take when trying to locate, you know, their biological family members if it was a closed adoption?
Well, first you go to your adoption agency. Most people in my era was Catholic Charities, but there's other adoption agencies. Ask for information. They should be able to give you the non-identifying information in the file. That's not illegal. Depends also in which state that you were adopted from. So Illinois has changed their adoption statutes and they have an open records system now. New York does too. But not every state allows adoptees to access their records. So it really does depend on the state. While I would like to say a genetic genealogy like Ancestry and Me are helpful, they are, but only to a certain extent. The databases are limited to who signs up. And I would caution anybody to make contact with a birth relative over the internet. You're not as prepared for what could happen when you don't have a social worker or an intermediary helping you through those things. I was really glad that I did have one that to teach me this could happen, and you don't want this to happen. So it may help you or may not help you. I liked the idea of having a social worker help me make the outreach.
Right. So you kind of mentioned how you did have that sense of disconnection almost, or rejection from when you did find your parents. Do you have any advice or any resources that you could recommend for adoptees who feel that same sense of disconnection or overall rejection?
Well, a lot of the adoption agencies have these support groups that I was talking about earlier, led, moderated by a social worker. So that's one. There's also some great online forums. NAAP United has groups, counseling groups, but also Zoom forums where you can sit in the same room with everybody from the adoption triad and talk about issues. And those are every 2 weeks. So there's plenty of resources through Facebook and the internet to get involved in.
I also just want to touch on a few other things. What suggestions do you have regarding finding and, you know, owning your identity? Because obviously once, you know, you find those biological parents, a lot can change and you can feel, like I said earlier, that sort of disconnection. I mean, what do you have on that?
My relationship with my birth mom is not what I thought it was going to be. She has her own set of issues, so we are still very careful with one another. On the other hand, my relationship with my half-siblings has been amazing. It's like I was raised with this brother and sister. They're very grateful to have us in our lives, but they also don't have the baggage of, you know, what our birth parents went through. They're just happy to have a sibling and be involved in everybody's lives now, which is a great thing.
Right. So I think the last thing here for me is just, you know, you obviously haven't had any children. You've put up for a closed adoption, but, you know, your birth parents did. So what advice would you give to a young woman considering placing her child for closed adoption?
That she should meet with the adoptive parents and come up with an adoption plan that works for her. you know, whether she wants to have contact in person every year on their birthday, or is it going to be better just to exchange letters and pictures until the child's 18 years old? She should really think about what contact that she wants and what information that she wants to pass on to the adoptive parents. And one of the things that I think would have been a lovely, lovely thing to have had growing up is a letter from my birth mom to me, just saying, you know, I loved you. I couldn't make a life for you with me. Just some kind of explanation. And that letter, I think, would have been a beautiful thing to have. And I know that adoption agencies encourage birth moms to do that, whether they choose to have contact with them during their growing years or not.
Right. So a little change of the, you know, sensitive topic to a little bit more fun and exciting. So like we all said, you've had quite the journey. Is there any way you could share like a funny or a happy or even a little aha moment that you experienced along the way?
I've got two actually. And one has to do with my half brother. When the day he called me on the phone, I didn't know he was going to call. And I picked up the phone and he said, "Is this Julie?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "This is your brother from another mother." So that was humorous. The other thing that's so interesting to me about DNA and genetic genealogy is our connection to our children. So when I sent in my 23andMe, I give my kids a kit too. And my sister had given some to her son and daughter. And when I got the results back, so my sister and I are identical twins, my nephew is higher on the list to be like me than two of my younger kids. So that I think is a crazy thing. I mean, it's a small percentage. It's like 0.01. But yeah, he said, you know, I'm more like you than your kids. So I think that that's an interesting thing.
I know you mentioned earlier that you are an author, and I would love to know more, and I think our audience would love to know more about your award-winning books and how they can connect with you and engage with your content.
Well, I've mentioned Twice a Daughter, A Search for Identity, Family, and Belonging. So that's the search that my twin sister and I undertook to find our birth relatives and the crazy story of all the ups and downs. And then at the same time as writing that book, I started blogging, and I have a blog on my website, juliemcgewauthor.com. And a lot of those essays I submitted to contests and publish in newspapers and periodicals. So the second book, Belonging Matters, which came out in November for National Adoption Awareness Month, a collection of those prize essays. And then I have a third book coming out next February, and it's a prequel to Twice a Daughter. So what it was like growing up in my crazy family.
That is amazing. So kind of on this closing note, Julie, you have been amazing. I just want to thank you again for spending time with us on Healing Hearts. Your transparency and vulnerability are so cherished. Your story is very unique and unlike something we've really ever heard. It's multifaceted, it's inspiring, and I have no doubt it will resonate with our listeners. Thank you again, and we really appreciate your time.
Oh, I appreciate talking about my story with everybody.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. We hope you found warmth and wisdom here to help you on your parenting odyssey. What is the best way to support us? Please subscribe, leave a review, and share Healing Hearts with anyone who could use this supportive community. Stay connected with us on social media or visit www.speakupforkidspbc.org for more information. Remember, a heart, like a garden, needs care to flourish. Until next time, you've been listening to Healing Hearts.